parents want the same things for their children. We want them to be safe and healthy, to feel loved, to get an education, to have dreams and a hope of realizing them. All children deserve those things, but they don't all get them. In more than 100 countries around the world, children die every day, every hour, from hunger, poverty, and preventable disease. I'm Anne Strainchamps, and today, stories from the front lines of the battle to save children. My guest is Carol Stern. She's the president and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. She's just written a beautiful memoir about her years traveling around the globe, helping mothers and children and learning from them. It's called I Believe in Zero, and that means zero hunger, zero poverty, zero disease. As always, we'll welcome your calls in this hour. Maybe you have done aid work with children and families and have some stories of your own to share of children who've inspired you. The number is 800-642-1234. And Carol Stern, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
So as head of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, you visit a lot of the world's hot spots, places where children and mothers are most at risk. And so you've witnessed, you know, some difficult things. In the book, you describe feeling personally transformed by a lot of these trips. How so?
I think I came into this job thinking I really knew what I was doing. You know, I'd had a 30-plus year career in nonprofit management, and this was going to be the next iteration of that. And I would go into it and be able to handle every situation I was in. And then in my first trip, I quickly saw that I had no idea what I was doing, that the filters through which I see the world were so skewed by my experiences that I needed to take the past 7 years and sit back and say, teach me.
Was that first trip, was that the one to Mozambique?
Yes, that's the one to Mozambique. And I was traveling with a mobile medical unit, and we, you know, you drive, you're off-road, you hope your Jeep driver has some idea where you are because it all starts to look the same to you. And suddenly he'll make a left by a tree, and as you come around the bend, there'll be a couple hundred people sitting in a field waiting for the doctor that's with you. And, you know, so you're immediately struck by the fact that this doctor comes once a month. And here I am, you know, a mom in New York who gets angry when my kids are sick and I can't get into the pediatrician's office at the hour I want to get in, you know. And these women are with their babies waiting quietly on a lawn for the doctor. Wow. And
you write about in that very first trip to Mozambique, there was one of those mothers you met, a woman named Rosa, who you write about that as a really transformative encounter for you. Tell us about Rosa.
So I met Rosa. We went to one of the few clinics that I actually saw on that trip. And it was, you know, I'll give you a little description. It's a two-room building. It has one room, which is a sterile environment, or as sterile as it could be, which is a birthing room, which basically had a birthing table and some very rudimentary instruments, but nothing else. And then the other room had roughly 8 to 10 beds, each of which had a bed net. And as Rosa pointed out to me, there were screens in the windows. She'd never seen screens before. So that was a big deal when I met her. And she had given birth roughly an hour before I arrived to a beautiful baby, and this was my first trip. She was my first mom, and so I walked over. I asked what I thought was a pretty normal mom question. You know, I said, so is this your first child? And she answered me really matter-of-factly and very quietly, and it took me a few minutes till I realized what she said. She said to me, it's the first one that lived. And I was dumbfounded. I didn't quite know what to say. And she began to tell me her birth story. And as I explain in the book, all I could think about was mine. You know, the first time I gave birth, my mom had bought me a Gucci suitcase. This little overnight bag when she found out I was pregnant, and I had packed it with, you know, this is pre-cell phone, so I'd packed it with like every phone number I had so we could call, and a bottle of champagne that we were going to drink. And in all candor, this really ethereal nightgown that I truly believed I'd wear for this birthing experience. Like, how naive was I? And my mom was there, my dad, my husband, my in-laws, my sister-in-law, everybody was at the hospital, and I gave birth. Rosa was working in the rice paddy. It was 106 degrees. She went into labor. She put her basket down. She started to walk to this clinic.
How far was that?
Well, she walked all by herself for 4 hours.
4 hours in labor?
In labor. And no one else could put that basket down. This is their livelihood. So she went all by herself. She sat on a lawn. She waited till she was really ready to deliver, and she went into this birthing room where she had a medical attendant with a sixth grade education.
No doctor, no nurses.
No doctors, no nurse. Now, when I gave birth, I ended up having to have a C-section. In Rose's case, even if the baby had just been breech, both mom and baby probably would have died because there was no one there who would have known what to do, and there was no ambulance outside to take her to a hospital. There was no road. There was no hospital for hours.
Is that what happened to her previous babies?
Her previous babies, Rosa, as I learned later on, is HIV positive and had lost her children to HIV-related complications. So this time, she was on ARVs. She was coming to this clinic for the drugs. That's how she knew about the clinic. And she was determined to have this healthy baby. But now that the baby was born, Rosa can't read. She can't write. She can't do basic arithmetic. She owns no scale at home. And all of the baby's medications, three of them, very specific directions and calibrated based on baby weight. Mm-hmm. And she can't manage that. So she will take her baby home 24 hours after she gets to sleep in the room with the screens.
Is she going to have to walk home 4 hours?
She's going to walk home by herself.
With a newborn,
and she's going to walk back every day.
Wait, every day?
Every day for 3 weeks, so her baby can have those drugs.
So she's going to walk for 8 hours a day carrying a newborn just to make sure that her baby and she get the drugs so her baby doesn't have
exactly.
HIV.
Exactly. You know. Wow. I went home after I gave birth and was a princess for a couple of days, you know. She's going
to
walk.
So tell me about how you reacted to that. Personally, I would imagine that encounter, especially for a woman who you've described a life of privilege, would be shattering, personally, in some way.
It was and it wasn't. You know, there were so many things that were different between Rosa and I, and at the same time, we were both moms. We both knew what that felt like. We both knew the joy of that baby being put in your arms. We both understood that you would walk 4 hours to save that child. Of course you would. And so there was joy, you know, I say it to my kids all the time, there was joy in Mudville. I mean, a baby had just been born. And that's what we celebrated.
I want to keep talking with you about how you hang on to a sense of optimism when you're facing some of the world's worst suffering and most difficult conditions. We're talking with Carol Stern. She is the president and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, author of I Believe in Zero, Learning from the World's Children. Coming up, we'll talk about teaching children about privilege and poverty. Maybe you have thoughts about that, and you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@WPR.org. I'm Ann Strangchamps with Steve Paulson, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. We're taking just a few minutes out from our regular programming to remind you that you count on Wisconsin Public Radio for great discussions, and it's your gift of any amount that makes these discussions possible. So won't you take a minute out of your day and give now at WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552.
And we had a terrific hour last hour. We heard from 57 new and returning members. Thank you for those pledges. Right now, we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,500. So a wonderful opportunity for you right now. This extremely generous match is from an anonymous donor from Green Bay. It is her way of encouraging you to join her in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. So get your pledge doubled right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, these challenge grants are really worth catching. How often does somebody offer to volunteer to double your money? Anyway, it's a chance to make a twice as generous gift to Wisconsin Public Radio as you would like to. So go ahead and do that at 888-202-2552. You know, here on 45 North, we like to explore ideas, stories, places. We like guests who remind us to step out of our ruts, to welcome the unexpected adventure, to see ordinary places with fresh eyes. That's why we've brought you shows on things like place hacking, people who explore hidden places in cities, or micro-adventures, 24-hour adventures you can take from your own backyard. We've talked about the joys of small towns and of exploring America's national parks.
And 45 North is a relatively new program here on Wisconsin Public Radio. So this is your chance to step forward and say, yeah, I really appreciate, I enjoy this this celebration of arts and ideas, and I love this chance to quench my curiosity. So this is your time right now to offer financial support, because it is a vital part of what makes this program and what makes WPR possible. Make a contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, one reason you might appreciate Wisconsin Public Radio is for the pleasure that it brings to your own life, but it is also a service that is, of course, available to everyone. And when you choose to support it, you are helping make it possible for the entire community. So that might also be a reason that it matters to you to help support high-quality information and entertainment.
And so become a member with a contribution of, let's say, $5 a month, and you are not only doing something that's good for yourself, you're doing something good for the whole community. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Steve, you know, a lot of people say to me, well, but Wisconsin Public Radio operates, you guys get tax dollars, right? You have federal funding and funding from the state, maybe. So why should we pay any extra for Wisconsin Public Radio? Well, in fact, we do get funding from the federal government and from the state. But you know what the single largest source of our income is? It's listener contributions. That means you.
Your support is vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. Now that you know how important listener support is to WPR, make that pledge. Make a contribution. Show your support for 45 North and all the other programs that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. You can make that donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Don't forget, we've got that dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from a really generous donor in Green Bay, so thanks. But what that means, of course, is that when you give $50, it turns into $100. $100 is actually a $200 contribution. So it's a great way to make your contribution go even further. So get your pledge matched dollar-for-dollar right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a critical resource for the state, and the only way that it's going to be maintained in the long term is to have people who support it. I think it's great to be able to hear what is happening in various parts of the world. I think it's critical to have that resource available, whether we use it every day or not. I like being part of the system that is supporting WPR. Being a supporter of WPR is important for everyone so that they can make use of the resource that is available in our state. I'm Doug Nelson from Pewaukee, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me as a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Steve Paulson here with Ann Strainchamps asking for your support of WPR during this fall membership drive. Maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're wondering how much you should give, it's completely individual. Just know that your contribution in any amount at all gets turned into great programs. Programs like 45 North, like so many other programs on Wisconsin Public Radio that keep you informed and entertained, we hope, all year long.
And remember, we have that dollar-for-dollar match going on right now. And these opportunities don't happen that often. So when they do, this is your chance to step forward. So what does that mean? A $50 pledge becomes $100. A $200 pledge becomes $400. Whatever is the right amount, it will be doubled. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And support of WPR goes twice as far.
Thank you so much for your contributions. It's every dollar makes a difference. Every dollar keeps us here on the air for you. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Steve, thanks so much for coming in and joining us.
You'll see me soon.
Okay. Coming up at 4 today on Central Time, Rob Ferret and Veronica Rickert will be looking back at some of the coolest toys of all time. And then they'll explore the latest from around Wisconsin during the weekly news roundup. But right now, let's go back to our conversation with Carol Stern. She's the president and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. UNICEF, author of this gorgeous new memoir, I Believe in Zero, which means zero hunger, poverty, and disease. And Carol, I'm curious, you took your son, one of your sons, Lee, with you on one of your early aid trips. Why did you choose to do that?
And I've actually taken the kids a number of times now, but the first trip started because one of my board members and I, who had been on a trip together, were talking about how important it was to teach our kids kind of a discipline of gratitude, if you will. Mm-hmm. And how do you do that? And how do you make it real for them? And I do have the privilege to be able to go to these places. Why not take my children? So we organized really what was an amazing trip. I've done it since a number of times, but the first one was phenomenal. 10 women, 9 kids. We had an extra mom. They ranged in age. The youngest one was 10. The oldest one was 16. Mm-hmm. And they bonded immediately. I mean, it was really interesting because 10-year-olds, 16-year-olds, big gap, but they somehow managed to really form a very tight-knit group.
And you went to Brazil, right?
We went
deep into the Amazon basin, I think.
Absolutely. We flew into Manaus. We boarded a boat. We lived on that boat for the whole trip, and we went up the Amazon River to really the middle of nowhere. And what was great was because we were on a boat, the kids had the freedom at night to be by themselves. Where could they go? And the moms had the freedom to lie on the deck and watch these magnificent stars shoot all over the place. And so,
but you write that at first, the kids weren't necessarily all thrilled about this. Some of them felt like your son felt a little bit like he'd been dragged on this trip. There they are in the middle of the Amazon, but they're plugged into their iPods and they're first world kids, right?
Absolutely. The first day we sat in a circle and we went around, why are you here? And most of the kids were polite enough to give some magnificent reason. But my own son did say, because I had no choice. typical kids. But on their very first speaker, they walked in, they had with them iPods, laptops, there was headphones on every kid. And I thought, oh my God, why did I plan this trip? This is going to be awful. And we had a young man come and talk to them, whose name I've changed in the book. So I'm choosing my words here not to call him by his real name.
R.C. You call
R.C.
him in the book, right?
Thank you. Who began to tell them his story.
And he's about their age?
Their age, 16, HIV positive, and had never before publicly acknowledged it. This was the first time he'd ever said those words out loud in front of a group. So it was a very emotional speech.
Is there a big stigma in Brazil against having
in
HIV?
In his village, very big stigma. He had contracted the disease through transfusions as a baby and had spent the rest of his life never telling his friends. His best friends do not know he's HIV positive. And it was very isolating, very lonely. And then he learned through UNICEF of a website where there are chats with other kids like him, a place where you could actually, through a password, be part of a community like that. But of course, he lives in a village where he's very poor and he doesn't have a computer. So his mom and he both would skip a meal each week and take that money so he could go up the river on a boat for an hour to a cafe and pay to be part of a chat once a week.
Wow.
And I watched our kids take the headphones off. I watched them put them away. The laptops got hidden. They suddenly realized what they had. There wasn't a dry eye in the place when this young man was done talking about what it meant to him to be part of this community. And we knew he was coming, so we had pre-planned and brought this child a computer. We gave him this computer, and everyone cried. And the young man said to our kids that it was that he'd known tears all his life. This was his quote. I've known tears all my life. I've never known what tears of happiness were before. And it changed every child in the room.
I have to tell you, when I read that passage in the book, I cried. That was, and I don't cry easily reading. That was, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. What does your son say now about that trip?
He does talk about how it changed his life. And there's a funny thing in this same chapter about how he wanted to pack his Linkin Park shirt and I wouldn't let him because it was ratty and it had holes in it. And mom is the CEO and you really need to look a little neater. And he had absolutely no patience for that. And the last day on the trip, he's in a classroom in the middle of nowhere. And he asks the kids, does anyone here like music? And this kid stands up on a chair and yells, Linkin Park. And my son looks at me like with death eyes, But he's told that story a million times now about the fact that in the middle of nowhere, here's a kid who likes the same music as him. And that they really are kids and that they really are going through some things that are the same, even though he lives in a home in Queens and commutes on a subway to an amazing school. And this young man lives in a village in a one-room hut. You know, it was quite something, and it was a life-changing experience for him.
It sounds life-changing and priceless for a kid or for an adult. I'm curious, that whole experience must have changed some of your thinking about parenting, especially parenting kids of privilege, and what our responsibilities are as parents.
You know, I think I've come, and it's interesting, that's an evolving thing still for me. You know, how do you balance the privilege with what you see? And I don't apologize for the privilege.
Because you don't want to overload them with guilt, right?
Absolutely not. I work hard for what I earn. My husband works hard for what he earns. Neither of us took a vow of poverty. You know, that's not who we are. We work hard. We're paid well. And I don't want my children to believe that they can't have that as well or that there's anything wrong with that. That's the American dream. But I do want them to understand that children are not defined by the borders they happen to be born between, but by the age that they are. So these are not, you know, Brazil's children or Vietnam's children or Africa's children. These are children. And if you're privileged enough to be able to share, you need to share. You know, the reading I've been doing everywhere as I've been promoting the book comes from the end of the book. I always kid around that I read the end first. But and it is the story of encountering a woman in the middle of the desert during a food shortage. And I had an apple in my backpack and I gave it to her. The story is much more involved in the book. But the reason I read that at most readings is because we all have apples in our backpack. We all have something that doesn't mean the world to us, but is the world for somebody else. And if we could just harness the apples in our backpacks, we could bring the number of children who die every day from preventable causes all the way down. I mean, today, 18,000 children will die while you and I are sitting here talking.
18,000?
18,000 each and every day of causes we can prevent. So that's not the disease we don't have a cure for. That's not the earthquake we can't predict, but things we know how to prevent and we're just not preventing it.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about also, was how you maintain that sense of optimism that you've just demonstrated in the face of what you describe, 18,000 children die a day, or in the face of the kind of human suffering that you've seen up close and personal. How do you hold on to that sense of optimism?
The kids. The children that I visit are still children. They still play. You know, I used to talk in the book about how all parents want the same things for their children, but the other two things I've seen that are the same everywhere I go is that wherever there are kids, there's some kind of ball. They're always playing with a ball. You know, I really have begun to believe that it's innate, that human beings have to kick something or throw something and receive it and kick it back, you know, because in every country, and more often than not, it's rags tied with string, but they're always playing and they're kids. And I, you know, described last night actually trying to teach a group of kids in Haiti how to play duck, duck, goose when we didn't speak the same language. And
This was after the earthquake.
And I was really good at giving them what a duck was by acting out and flapping my wings and the whole bit, and got all the kids to understand the word duck. And then suddenly I was like, oh, my God, now how do I teach them goose? You know, like what could you possibly? And you giggle and you can't help it because the kids are laughing, you know. So we're surrounded by rubble and it's a horrible place and there's nothing for these kids to eat for lunch.
And but many of these kids have seen their parents die.
But we're all laughing on the ground, hysterical, because we can't act out a goose. They're kids. And the other thing that's been the same everywhere I've gone is that if I sit on the ground long enough, a kid will sit on me. And they don't ask permission. They just plop themselves on your lap. And it's delicious. I mean, it feels good no matter where you are to just think this kid finds me safe. And that hug that you get sustains you through everything else that you see.
Do you think people who do aid work, you know, like you with children, have an easier time holding on to that sense that, yes, we can make things better than people who work with adults? I mean, I wonder if there's something about that natural resiliency that children have that kind of translates.
I think the joy of children permeates everything we do because they do giggle and they do remind you to be silly. I mean, I play head, shoulders, knees and toes in every country I go to and I laugh. It's like therapy for me. You know, I always say it's my selfish game. So yes, on one level. On the other level, you know, you sit with a mom and you watch a baby die and you can't come up with anything that makes that okay. Nothing. They've lived 6 days. They've done nothing wrong. They didn't choose poverty. They were born into poverty. They didn't choose the war that's going on around them. The politics did, and they're a baby. And that makes it harder.
What do you think are the main most important issues or the most solvable problems right now? What would do most to save children?
Opposite ends of the spectrums. You know, UNICEF right now is responsible for immunizing more than half of the world's children. We have to make sure we get every child immunized so we're preventing the diseases that kill. And then secondly, we want to teach kids to wash their hands. Hand washing has brought under 5 child mortality down probably more than any intervention except immunization.
You're kidding. Just hand
just
washing.
Just hand washing.
But you know, that sounds so easy, but it's a bigger problem because in so many places, the kids don't have water to wash their hands with.
No water, no soap, and no understanding of why that's important or how to do it. I mean, it's an interesting thing. But the third is education. Because if we don't teach our children to read and write and do arithmetic, they will have no options. They will know no world beyond the borders of that village. And once they can read, the whole world opens up. You know, and Thomas Jefferson, and I'll bastardize the quote, but he said something to the effect of, if we solve all the problems of the world and we fail to solve the problems of education, our children will destroy what we bequeath them. But if we solve only the problems of education, our children will solve the problems of the world. And I truly believe that.
I'm talking with Carol Stern. She's the president and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, author of a new memoir, I Believe in Zero, Learning from the World's Children. It's great to talk with you this morning. I'm Ann Strangemps. This is 45 North on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. I'm Ann Strangemps with Steve Paulson. You know, at Wisconsin Public Radio, listener contributions are our single largest source of funding. That means that when you make a contribution, your gift helps keep the programs that you value, including this one, on the air. Won't you take a minute out of your busy day and make your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have a dollar-for-dollar match going on right now, up to $2,500. It is a great time to pledge because for every dollar you give, a generous donor from Green Bay will donate an additional dollar. It's her way of encouraging you to support WPR. Double the impact of your pledge right now by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Listening to the Ideas Network sometimes can feel like going out for coffee with a really smart friend. It can be informative, enjoyable, exploratory, can pique your curiosity.
But you know what? Someone's got to pay for it. You make this daily cup of coffee on the Ideas Network possible with your financial support. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I really do love on the Friday mornings when I'm on the air with you, thinking that we are having a cup of coffee together and talking with someone really interesting. It's such fun to find people like Carol Stern who are doing such inspiring work and, you know, to have a chance to talk with them, to sit around, have a cup of coffee. And it's great to have you along, too. And the fact that we can do this is thanks to you. Thanks to so many listeners like you. So we are very grateful and very proud and look forward to your support at WPR.org and 888-202-2552.
And we are looking for sustaining members in particular. You can join their ranks by choosing a monthly payment, let's say $10 a month, and setting it up on an ongoing basis. It is the best way to support the station you rely on. So become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Sometimes during these drives, I try to stop and think about, well, when do I use Wisconsin Public Radio most? And personally, for me, it's a lifesaver when I'm driving. You know, those days when you've got to do a lot of errands and you're just on the road from one place to another and it gets so boring. And I turn on Wisconsin Public Radio and I never know what I'm going to hear, and it's always interesting. And I know you've had the same experience. So think about all the boring moments in your life that Wisconsin Public Radio has improved.
Or I think about the way I listen to the radio in the kitchen. It's a great thing to do, I find, when I'm cooking, just because it's a chance to spend some time with the radio, to hear all the wonderful things that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm guessing that you've had that experience as well, and your support makes WPR possible. It turns ordinary activities into extraordinary ones, and you know this is true. Your life is better with WPR in it. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are so close to meeting that challenge grant. We've got that dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from a generous donor in Green Bay. What that means is that when you give $50, it's actually $100. When you give $100, it's actually $200. So it's a great opportunity. I mean, how often does somebody offer to double your money for you? And I know we'd all love to give more generously than we can. So take advantage of this moment right now and this challenge grant. You can go make your contribution online at WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552.
I especially like the talk shows. Just having a host and a guest isn't good enough for me. I really like the interaction, and I have called in, but very rarely. I just enjoy hearing other people call in and share information. It's a wonderful source of news for me. I'm Barbara Gilmore from Grafton, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for all my news about our world.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support during this fall membership drive. I'm Steve Paulson here with Ann Strainchamps, asking for your support of WPR, and especially during this hour for 45 North, this program that celebrates arts and culture and gets you ready for the weekend. Thank you in advance for your gift of $10 or $15 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're going to be heading back to our conversation with Carol Stern in just a couple of minutes, but just want to remind you that listeners, you make the work that we do here at Wisconsin Public Radio worthwhile. We're doing it for you, not to hear ourselves talk on the radio, not for Carol Stern's or anybody else's benefit. It's for you, and you are what make our work possible.
And you get all of these programs because members kick in a large portion of our budget, the single largest part. So become a member now. Help make WPR possible with your gift of $5 a month or any amount you choose at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We can break it down a little bit, can't we? I think, let's say a $10 a month contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio. That's a little over, oh, I'm bad at math, 30 cents,
30 cents a day.
Okay. So think of what you spend 30 cents a day on. Wow, you can't even buy a quarter of a cup of coffee for that. So think about all the things that you value, perhaps even less than Wisconsin Public Radio. So I don't know, it's close with coffee.
Right. So spend a little right now and think about all that you get in return. Make your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Whether you go online or call, you will be making an investment in the station that you use every day.
Steve, thank you so much for being here today. It's been great having you. Thanks. I hope we'll see you back again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And coming up at 11 this morning, it may seem like garden season is over, but on Garden Talk, Larry Mueller will be finding out how we can eke a little more out by extending the growing season. And right now, let's go back to talking with Carol Stern. She's the president and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, author of this great new memoir, I Believe in Zero, Learning from the World's Children. And Carol, we've been talking in an upbeat way, but I do want to ask you about, there was one trip, it's hard to read about, and was maybe the most galvanizing for you. It was a trip you took to Sierra Leone. Could you tell us about that?
Sure. I went to Sierra Leone as part of a mission on tetanus. I was there with Selma Hayek, who was the spokesperson for a Pampers campaign, where when you buy one pack of Pampers, they would donate one tetanus vaccine. And if you vaccinate women of childbearing age, then they pass that immunization on to a child when a child is born, which is really critically important.
You said at the time Sierra Leone was like ground zero for infant mortality.
Absolutely. And so we landed in Sierra Leone, and the Minister of Health informed us that there was a baby in a nearby hospital that actually had contracted tetanus.
And how do they get tetanus?
Well, this particular case, unfortunately, the woman had given birth at home, as most women in developing nations do. And when they cut the umbilical cord with a piece of metal from the hut, and it was not a sanitized piece of metal, and there were tetanus spores everywhere. And so unknowingly, the woman actually gave her child tetanus.
Is that a common story?
It is a common story. And that's why the immunizing women is so important, because that child would have been immunized if the mom had been immunized. So we went to the hospital to see it because I'd never seen the disease. In our country, step in a nail, you get a tetanus shot.
Right.
I had no idea what this disease was like. So we got to the hospital. The first thing is that Selma asked for her ladies' room, and they kind of looked at us like we had lost our minds because there was no running water at the hospital. And then you found that there were no nurses, so you have children on mats on the floor, and their moms are staying with them, and the moms are caring for them, emptying chamber pots, cooking outside on fires and bringing the meals, often with other children staying with them. And off in a corner, kind of partitioned off, was a woman and her six-day-old baby. And I walked in, and the baby had tetanus. And it makes a child super sensory. You can't hold the baby, because if you touch the baby, it will hurt the child. And you can't sing to the baby, because the sound will hurt the child. And the room was partitioned off because you can't even really let light in, because, again, the light will hurt the child. So
oh
when
my
you
God,
think
this
of,
sounds like an excruciating,
excruciating.
Illness.
The child was convulsing. And you think of all the ways as a mom you comfort your children, you hug them, you sing to them, you turn on the light when it's dark. This poor young mom could do none of that. She didn't speak any English. I did not speak her language. Someone between us introduced me to her and explained who I was. And I sat down next to her. And what do you say to a mom as you're watching this child in agony? So I just took her hand. And we sat like that. I don't know how long, just holding hands, because we couldn't talk to each other. And at a certain moment, I realized the room had gotten quiet. And I looked and literally could see the color drain out of her baby's hands. And I knew the baby was dead. And I knew she didn't know. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, nothing had prepared me to watch a six-day-old baby die. Nothing had prepared me to have to look the mom in the face and know that. And all I could think of in my head at that moment was, at that time, 25,000 children were dying every day. And all I could think about was, there are 24,999 more moms sitting in a room like this somewhere. Like, the number became real. And the concept of I believe in zero comes from that day, because even the death of one child you could prevent is one death too many. When you have to look that mom in the face and know that a 70-cent vaccine was the difference between her child's life and death, how do you look her in the face? As you said, 70 cents, you can't buy a cup of coffee for that. So, how do you look her in the face? And that's when I know for myself this campaign became real, the conviction that we are going to see zero, because we have to see zero. Anything less is unacceptable.
You had a film crew with you, I think. Did you catch any of that on tape? And what did you think about using it?
We did catch it on tape, and we debated for hours whether it should be shared or not. And then in the end, it was shared. Oh. And it was shared on Nightline, and it was shared very, very appropriately. Cynthia mm-hmm. McFadden was the host. She was with me. She is phenomenal. She really is. And she did it with heart and with soul and with great integrity. And because we decided if a six-day-old could die from it, and then the public could handle it.
People deserve to see it.
Right.
Right.
You had to give some meaning to this death, and the only meaning we could come up with was to prevent the next one.
So that was really when the I Believe in Zero campaign kind of took over. For you, what's the situation in Sierra Leone like now?
I mean, it's
how
better.
Many more of those 70-cent vaccines?
Well, it's better. It's better. But we were in this amazing campaign with Kiwanis International to raise $110 million to completely eliminate the disease of tetanus. There are 20-something countries left. We have actually successfully eliminated it in many countries. And the under 5 child mortality numbers. I mean, there's a huge success story here. Most people think this is, you know, the black hole and money's being poured in and nothing good is happening. But in the 1980s, over 30,000, close to 36,000 children were dying every day of causes we could prevent. So we've halved that number since the 1980s. And in that same time period, the world's population has tripled. So theoretically, if we had done nothing and the ratio stayed the same, 90,000 children a day could be dying from preventable causes. So 18,000 is a huge success. I wish I had created a product that would show that success so I'd be a rich woman and I would fund the solutions. But even one, 18,000 is just too many.
And when you say this is doable, we can do this, what gets in the way? Is it the money to purchase the vaccines? Is it actually traveling to remote places and getting the vaccines injected? What's in the way?
D, all of the above. The step one is we got to get America on our feet. I am the child of a Holocaust survivor. The question I asked my mother repeatedly when I was a young kid was, so where was everybody? Like, how did the world let this happen? And I could not get my arms around how the world could let children die, especially. Until I took this job, I didn't know 18,000 children were dying every day. How could I not know that? I am an educated woman working in a nonprofit space. The average American has no idea this is going on, and we have to make it a priority. Again, these are children. They're not defined by what country they belong to.
But I think that's what's interesting is why is it that that's information that's out there. Why don't we know that 18,000 children a day are dying? Part of it, I think, is because the numbers are so hard to make personal. You know, it's so hard to get galvanized when it's just big numbers. How do you begin to break that down?
That's candidly why I wrote the book. I would come back from each of these trips, and there's always a story to tell. You know, there's always the kid who touched your heart. I've been to 42 countries in the 7 years I've worked for UNICEF, and I probably could write, you know, three more books still. And I decided that it was time to tell the stories, excuse me, because you aren't going to remember the number. The number has no meaning. But if you can meet Rosa, if you can hear about Menumata, if you can hear about the people, perhaps I can touch your heart enough to make you actually stand up and do something.
Hmm. Have you found that that's working?
You know, the book's been out for 2 weeks, so time will tell. But it is the mail I'm getting says yes. You know, but again, it is a call to action. It is we need to make children our priority. We need to say to legislators, what's your stand on children? We need to make it a campaign platform. We need to find the apple in our backpack, and we need to use it.
The other reason I think that it's difficult is that so many of us simply feel helpless. I mean, yeah, we can write a check, but that doesn't somehow feel like enough or feel very good. What would you say to all of us as, you know, we end the conversation? What can we do?
So here's a couple things. Write your legislators a letter today. Tell them this is important. Only 3% of America's philanthropy goes to international causes, and then to children, only a small piece of it. Tell the government to stop cutting aid to children. That's one. Two, Halloween is right around the corner. Trick or treat for UNICEF, the original Kids Helping Kids. Take time to go on our website, unicefusa.org, so you can explain to your child what this is about and let your child stand tall and help save the life of another child. $1 buys enough clean water to sustain a child for 40 days. No child should die in the year 2013 for lack of a glass of water.
Carol, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been inspiring.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Carol Stern is president and CEO of the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, author of I Believe in Zero, Learning from the World's Children. I'm Anne Strainchamps, and we've got Steve Paulson, executive producer of To the Best of Our Knowledge, joining us. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Anne.
And what's the news from the pledge drive?
Well, actually, we have terrific news. If you were with us a little bit earlier this hour, you'd know that we had a dollar-for-dollar match going on. And we met that goal. In fact, we exceeded that goal. We do have another goal here. There's always a new goal, isn't there? There is the goal of 50 pledges by the end of the hour. And we are at 44 right now. So we are doing very well. And you can make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've been enjoying this conversation with Carol Stern. We've got more conversations coming up in just about at the top of the hour. We'll be talking with Rosalind Wiseman, who's a psychologist and expert on teenagers. She is the woman who her work led to the film Mean Girls, and she's got a brand new book out on teenage boys, subject, close to my heart since I have a teenage boy, but a lot of you will love that conversation as well. But we want to take just these few minutes to make this hour, the coming hour, and so many more hours on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. So choose a gift amount that works for you, and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with just a few minutes of your time. That's all it takes. Just give us your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, how you would like to pay. Whether you call or pledge online, we keep your personal information safe and we don't share it with any other organization.
Your gift supports the programs and stories that keep you connected to the world. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, one of the things that we know about people who listen to public radio, you are the kind of people who want to make your communities better. I'm guessing that you might be volunteering your time for some worthy cause. Well, making a financial contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio makes our communities better, too.
It spreads conversations that can literally change lives. Help the world. Your investment, together with donations from other people, makes news, conversation, ideas available to everyone. We are really proud to be an important part of the Wisconsin community. Won't you help us stay strong with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Listeners who rely on Wisconsin Public Radio are the most dependable source of income for the station. And maybe you can make a $1,200 contribution. You can pay for it in monthly installments of $100.
Help us stay strong and continue to grow, continue to create conversations and programs that can reach out beyond the borders of this station, beyond the borders of your city, beyond the borders of Wisconsin. Make a contribution of $100 a month, $20 a month, whatever feels right to you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, I'm Marilyn from Madison, Wisconsin. I always thought, gee, you know, one of these days I should become a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio. I thought, hey, maybe now is the time. And it's easy because it's just the one payment and they do the rest of it automatically. I just thought it was the best way to be supportive without having to feel guilty about not calling. It is easier. And it does give you a chance to feel superior. You can think, I've already done that. So if you're a listener and you like what you're getting from Wisconsin Public Radio, why not try to be a sustainer? All you have to do is pick up the phone. You won't have to feel one bit guilty anymore for not having done it. When you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, you can be proud that you are part of the team.
Make your donation in support of 45 North and the other programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Steve Paulson here with Ann Strangehamps asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during our fall membership drive. Whether your pledge is $5 a month or $100 a month or anything above or below that, we appreciate and count on your gift.
And Steve, we've got really fantastic news. Do you remember that challenge grant that we had up to $2,500?
Yep.
Well, we met that. So thank you so much to everyone who helped us meet that generous match. We are still looking for, we are just four pledges away from meeting our goal for this hour. Yours could be one of those. You can make your contribution, your your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Ann and I just have a few minutes left during this hour to ask for your help. We are so close. We're so close to that goal. The goal is 50 pledges for the hour. We are at 46 right now. We're just looking for four more of you. And, you know, maybe you're thinking, oh, I'll pledge next time. Well, you know what? We're getting near the end of the pledge drive here. In fact, this is the last day of 45 North. This is the time to do it. Today is your last chance to pledge your support for this show during this membership drive.
So don't delay anymore. Join the community of people who come together to make public radio happen and worthwhile. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Four more pledges in, the next 2 or 3 minutes or so.
Oh, we can do that.
We can do that. You pay for the programs you rely on when you give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Oh, and I should mention, you can also get our new travel thermos when you give $15 a month or more. I haven't even mentioned it. It's really great looking. It's got our logo on it, and then underneath, my favorite part, this little line that says, listener powered.
That is great.
Which is so true. This is radio that is listener powered. You are the power of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we have a powerful service that we've all created together. Be part of it by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we really appreciate our sustainers, members who give WPR such reliable monthly support. If you are already a sustainer, thank you very much. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by $5 a month or whatever amount you choose. And you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your pledge is so important. It's what keeps these programs on the air. It's what powers this service for you, for your neighbors, for your larger community. We can't thank you enough, and we count on you. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio.